Monopoly, a true continuing care retirement community. You can learn more about Splendido over breakfast at the Hilton Tucson East on Thursday, September the 20th at 9:30. That's this coming Thursday. RSVP and say you heard this on the Buckmaster Show. You can call 762-4090, 762-4090, SplendidoTucson.com. Dr. Petticone, good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be here.
Jimmy, good to see you.
My pleasure.
Tucson Unified School District facing a $17 million budget deficit for the next school year. What are some of the new cost-cutting measures that are on the table, Dr. Petticone?
Well, at the present time, we've done some things in the short term, like putting a freeze on hiring and putting a freeze on out-of-state travel, and just being very, very critical and scrutinizing every single dollar we're spending. And that should be something we do on a regular basis anyway. But in addition, we're now in the process of gathering public input to try to make a decision on how we're going to actually address the major and long-term issue of how we get this district to be fiscally stable and not just address the 17, from our perspective, the $17 million deficit, but also look at what it's going to take to be able to not have to come back to the table with deficits in the future. Some of this, as you know, Bill, is caused by the legislature not having funded public education. The fact that we're not on an override complicates this as well, and the fact that we've lost students over the past several years that have had a tremendous impact on the district's
fiscal situation. How big a loss of students?
We've lost in an average of 1,700 students a year, which is not actually proportionately different than what most other districts have experienced here locally across the state. Mesa, for example, has about the same proportion of loss for the number of students they have. So if you look at the last 3 years, this year we've actually stabilized a bit, and it looks as though we're going to probably be losing about 600 students this year, which is encouraging because we've lost 1,700 to 2,000 per year for the past 3 years.
And in percentage-wise, what would that be like?
Well, we're 50,000 students, and so okay. if you can do the math. It's been a significant number. Every one of those students is worth about $5,000 to the district. So.
And they go where? To charter schools or?
No, interestingly, some do. There's no question. But they'll go to, it's a choice concept in open enrollment in this town. A number of them will leave the city. Some will go to other schools, other public schools. We also get a number of out-of-district students as well. So there's that kind of dynamic that takes place. But immigration laws have had some impact in our district as well. So the analysis we've done indicates they're going to a lot of different places.
Jimmy Bogle now, The Weekly.
The master plan that you're working on, from what I understand, there have been 3 community meetings scheduled, and some folks have said that's not enough. Basically, there need to be more meetings. There's a survey going around as well. What do you say to the critics who say, you know, this is important. This is a big deal. This is talking about the future of TUSD. 3 meetings and the survey just aren't enough. What do you say to them?
Yeah, well, they're probably not getting on the website to look at what the plan is, because the 3 meetings were the initial town halls that were designed pretty much to get people to understand the nature of the difficulty and then begin to get some input on the direction that people think we should go. Now we're in the process of having focus groups, and the focus groups consist of community members. There will be 3 of those that will take place between the town hall meetings that took place, and then we're going to have what we're choosing to call open houses, where the focus groups are developing scenarios, and the scenarios will be based on the information that was received from the town hall, from the surveys. We've got about 1,000 people that have commented so far. And then they're kind of taking a look at mix and matching what people are suggesting we consider. Then from those town halls, we'll come back to the board, of course, all the way through this process. The board last Tuesday night suggested that now, because it is their process, suggested that we have another open forum, which we're going to do, where the board will be present, sitting in front as we would with other hearings we've had before, and then let the community come in, make comment as well. Then we go back to the board again. The board comes up with a couple of scenarios that they think are the ones that we should move out to the community. And then we have another open process that will take place. We also, Jimmy, understand that this is complicated a bit by the fact that there's a proposition that is it's coming up this November, Prop 204. The conditions will look different if Prop 204 passes than they do if it does not. And so all those things have to be it's a complex situation,
sure,
as you can imagine.
Something that was relatively big news, both in The Weekly and the Arizona Daily Star, was the Office of Civil Rights from the Department of Education just found that the TUSD retaliated against a whistleblower. Her name is Rose Hamway, mm-hmm, and she worked at Rincon and Saguaro High Schools. And she basically complained that the special needs students there weren't getting the attention they deserved, that there was some possible wrongdoing as well. And the federal government said, yep, she was retaliated against when she was fired, or at least her contract was not renewed. And the TUSD had to pay $180,000 or agreed to that settlement. Mm-hmm. What can you tell parents at those schools and in other schools who may have special needs students that they shouldn't be concerned about this?
Yeah, you know, we have about 13% of our students that are exceptional ed special needs students. And so I think most parents would agree we do a pretty good job with most students. You know, there will be differences of opinion about the best way to service individual students. The important message that I think I need to deliver is that we're not going to accept or tolerate the kinds of things that led to the situation that happened with Dr. Hamway. That happened just before I came into the district, and
sure.
we've taken a look at that to determine exactly what caused the retaliation issues, and we are putting strong measures in place to be sure that that does not occur again, including training of, and it wasn't just a part of the OCR settlement, but also what we believe we have to do to lift everybody's understanding of what we can't do. But in terms of services to students, the IEP meetings, the multidisciplinary meetings, when parents and faculty sit down to look at what's best for students, we have to be really willing to accept parent views in that, and we generally are. In situations like the ones that occurred with those 14 students, we've taken a look at them. We've remediated, for the most part, my understanding, as I've talked with the Exceptional Education Department, the situations surrounding the vast majority of those cases. And it takes a lot of work to get to a consensus decision about what's best for a student. So what I would say to parents is that we're going to continue to work hard to be sure that we're doing what's right, and we're committed to doing that. And you know, if we have problems, we've got to fix those problems, and that's our commitment.
Sure. Hamway was very critical of the district's Equal Opportunity Office, who she went to with her complaint, and she actually told us that it has kind of a reputation for if you complain about something, you're a troublemaker, you're not a whistleblower. What can you tell other employees of TUSD that if they see a problem, they don't have to worry about having the same thing that happened to Dr. Hamway happen to them?
Well, if I can tell you, if I thought that our Office of Equal Opportunity and our human relations folks were not doing the work that they should do, they would not be there. All right. So I think some of that comes from, and unfortunately, Dr. Hamway's experience. But it also comes from a generation, kind of a story generation surrounding organizations like this one. People are afraid that if they say something, there's going to be retribution. The only way that I know how to address that is to create a level of safety on the part of people mm-hmm. by our behaviors, by the way. When we find anything like that going on, I have to address that and address it aggressively to make sure people know that we're not tolerating that. So it's going to take some time, I think, for people to begin to build confidence that we're just not going to tolerate that kind of behavior. I will tell you, I've had a lot of people, I've heard this through emails, you know, people unfortunately are willing to email me and tell me things that I need to know. I mean, believe me, I need that. And when I investigate to find out what goes on, occasionally I do find that there's something that's got to be addressed. More often than not, I'm telling you the truth, there's the feeling that people are afraid that comes from a general feeling about that when it comes to authority and organization.
Sure.
So we just got to get at
and
that.
This doesn't help. Now, do you think things have changed in the Equal Opportunity Office since the Hamway thing went down, or do you disagree with the federal findings?
You said that
if there were an issue, you'd take care of it. Obviously, there was an issue here. So have things changed, or do you just disagree with the feds?
Yeah, like I said, we have to accept responsibility for this situation because when the federal government, the OCR, took a look at the situation, they found there was grounds for the claims that there was retaliation. I can't go through the situation that said why the administrators – and it's easy for me to say, by the way, that they're no longer with us, which is the case. The primary individuals that were involved in this are no longer here. But that's not an excuse. There were reasons why people felt justified in doing what they did. They looked at it almost with a level of innocence in some cases. It was less about aggressive retribution when you look at it on the face of it than it was people doing things that turned out to be retributory
yeah.
and really are not tolerable. But my point is the answer to your question is with education and with an insistence on our part that we do not allow this to happen, there's a different level of vigilance with this. I would hope we'll find that out.
Yeah.
Hopefully not the hard way.
And one last real quick question. She was very prominent. Lupita Garcia, an assistant superintendent, she recently resigned. Did this finding have anything to do with her resignation?
No, not at all.
John Petticone is with us. Dr. Petticone is the superintendent of the TUSD Unified School District. He had a bonus, which was given to him. After all was said and done, it was over $50,000. But the bonus, was this part, when you signed a contract with TUSD, there were performance levels, if they were met, you would get a bonus. Is that what that was about?
Yeah, the legislature passed a law that basically said every superintendent in the state had to have a 20% performance pay piece that was 20% of salary and benefits. If you were to ask the board members at that time, I said, look, I'm not interested, and I'm in here to do a job, and that kind of performance piece was not something that I sought, honestly. So I said, make my goals, fixing world peace. You know, make it something that you can't achieve if it's about the money. Otherwise, let's look at really aggressive goals that will be difficult to meet, and then I'll make a decision on what I do with any compensation I get. So, yeah, it was driven by a law.
And you got some compensation. You did with what are you going to do with it?
Well, I gave the first portion. As you know, that there was an error. I thought it was interesting that there was
an
error.
That's why I said when all is said and done, it turned out to be a little over $50,000.
You know, and I feel bad for board staff that where an error was made. But I'm glad it was done with me, because every time an error happens when I'm involved, I can say, you know what, I'm glad it's me. Now let's fix these things. But anyway, so the first piece was a portion of it. Then there was another almost $16,000 that came later. The first portion of it is I gave to EEF. As a matter of fact, they picked the check up today.
Educational Enrichment Foundation.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, mm-hmm. Educational Enrichment Foundation. We're going to create a fund for what I'd like to do is create it for students that are currently in high school who need a little additional help if they demonstrate strong leadership and civic responsibility. The other I just didn't accept. So.
Okay, we're going to take a break right here. This is Friday Focus. Dr. John Pettacone, TUSD superintendent, is with us. Jimmy Bogle from The Weekly. We're going to hear now from the people that make this program possible, the Buckmaster Show sponsors. Please support these people. They support us. Thank you.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable rugs looking like new with Arizona's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration. Karimi specializes in restoring antique silk and Navajo rugs with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at East Fort Lowland Dodge and say hello to owner-operator Amir Karimi. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. It's KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Inside Pyramid Federal Credit Union, customer service is what we do. Outside, community service is who we are. Inside, we help generations achieve their financial goals. Outside, we help those in need. We reach out to our members. We reach out to our community. Because Pyramid Federal Credit Union is passionate about one thing: people. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with more than a dozen projects underway, including the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson. Please use caution and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has ongoing support of expanded SunTran, SunVan service, SunExpress, and SunShuttle neighborhood service. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel around our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
My name is Mark Layton, and I'm the IT guy over at O'Neill Printing. In order to serve my Tucson clients, I've got to be able to quickly receive files up to 10 gigs in size. That's why we made the switch to Cox Business. We used to have an internet connection that could barely handle more than 2 file uploads at a time. With Cox Business, our connection is 10 times faster, and our bill is 40% less. Now that's what I call a no-brainer.
Get to know the business side of Cox at coxbusinessaz.com.
Welcome back to the Friday Focus interview. Dr. John Petticone, TUSD superintendent, is with us. Jimmy Bogle is editor of the Tucson Weekly. Dr. Petticone, I know you're very happy with the fact that there was a more than 40% reduction in the number of state-labeled D schools and a doubling of the number of B schools across all academic levels at TUSD. And one of the TUSD's high schools has been named one of the best high schools in the country, surpassing my alma mater, New Trier High School in Winnetka, Illinois, which for many, many years, as you know, New Trier was the number one public high school in the United States. And now I have learned from you during the break that there's a Tucson school that's passed it up.
I certainly am never going to criticize your alma mater, but that's an exceptional school in Illinois. But yeah, we're so proud of University High School for the work they've done. And people look at that high school and say, well, sure, they're going to do well. They collect the brightest, the best and the brightest. That is true. There are students there that are remarkable students, but we've got the quality of students that are there are spread throughout the district as well. But they do a wonderful job of working with very, very talented students to excel. And so we're proud of them. We're also proud of schools like C.E. Rose that become one of the nation's top urban schools, fighting a lot of the odds that they fight when you're serving an underserved population. So we've got a lot to celebrate in our district.
Here's Jimmy Bogle.
Let's talk about the future of TUSD, and obviously you're just one voice, a big voice, granted, in the future, because you've got a school board, and there's going to be up to possibly 3 new school board members coming on after the election in November. But facing what TUSD faces in terms of the declining enrollment, which has been going on for more than 3 years, it's kind of been accelerated a little bit, in terms of the big budget issues that you've got, what do you see as the future for TUSD? Less schools, different kinds of schools? You know, tell me what you see for TUSD in 2014-2015.
Well, again, it depends upon how the board, and you're right about a new board coming in, that will take, there's a learning curve, you know, and we'll see how that learning curve looks when the new board, if there's a new board.
Yeah.
It could be the same incumbents that are running, which could also be the case. But depending on what happens there, the decisions that are going to be made over the next 6 months are going to have a dramatic impact on what happens to this district and for this district for the next several years. It's hard to argue that we're trying to keep 92 schools alive when we have 50,000 students. If you look at that configuration, you look at the proportion of schools to students in any other district, especially urban districts, one would argue, and I think argue pretty well, that we have schools that we just simply have to look at. Part of the town halls, I don't know if you got online and saw any of that or if you were there, but we did an analysis of what does the state fund? What does the legislature fund in terms of student population per school? And generally, it's about 420 students is what the amount that we get from the state actually funds. So when we have schools that were built for 200 students or less, 200, 250, or were built for 400 or 500 that have 200 or 300 students in them, and that's at the elementary level, it's not a sustainable model. So the board is very reluctant to say school closure at this point, and I support that concern, but eventually we're going to have to face some very hard decisions.
How do you feel about, you mentioned Proposition, it's 204, the 1 cent permanent tax for education. It would mean what to TUSD if it's passed?
If it passes, we just got this morning another analysis by a financial expert, you know, financial expert in Arizona, and he's indicating it'll be about $600 per student. And so, if you just do the math at 50,000 students, we're looking at a significant amount of money that would more than offset this immediate problem.
Right, it would wipe out this $17 million deficit.
Right. But let me also add, though, that, and this is what we've had conversations with the board about this, that. That while it will take away our sense of the critical nature of this urgency that we face right now, the immediacy of that, it doesn't mean that we don't have to face the very things that we're talking about addressing and the challenges that will not go away simply by getting more money. So what we're hoping is that as a result of this, whether 204 passes or not, it'll be the impetus will be to take a look at how do we improve school achievement? How do we look at what the best quality services are per site? Is a 200-student school, for example, the right model? It's a neighborhood school. It's got real, real positive things associated with it. But can we provide the same services in that type of model as we could with a school that has more students? All those questions, the good news is we're discussing them. I don't want to see the sense of urgency diminish simply because we're off the hook for the critical crisis environment.
I just have to ask, because it's going to be a big issue in this election campaign, and it's kind of the thing hanging over TUSD, is Mexican-American studies. What's the latest in that? It's been kind of quiet, but I know, especially with this 12-candidate election coming up, it's going to be coming a little bit to the forefront, at least in terms of what people are talking about. What's the status of the Mexican-American studies issues right now?
Well, the backdrop for me, first of all, is that it's such an unfortunate situation that there was such wounding that took place as a result of this issue, regardless of what side of this you fall on. So that in itself, I think, is not going to go away easily. Right now, the courses have been suspended, and that's the way they will remain according to state law. We are in the process of building a multicultural curriculum by resolution of the board. We presented to them where we are in that process. There will be public meetings that are involved with the development of that curriculum. Our goal really is to do what we should have been doing all along, and that's taking care of all of our students and certainly Mexican-American students early in their educational career so that we don't lose them. The ethnic studies courses that were offered at the junior and senior level, and those are the ones that have been suspended. We also have, as you know, there's a lawsuit going on 2281. That still hasn't been resolved. We also have, we're in the process of developing a unitary plan with a special master, the conduit between us and the court.
Yeah, because ethnic studies was part of the desegregation plan, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it was part of the post-unitary plan,
yes.
Right? It wasn't part of the original desegregation
right.
order, correct? Yeah, but it is something that is part of the conversations taking place among the plaintiffs and us. And so what it will look like, what will happen, a lot of that's going to be determined in the next couple of months.
And this is an issue that probably will take many years, isn't it, to heal this community?
Yeah, and there was so much misinformation, emotion, and passion around this whole issue. There was so many things were said about what happened that some of it was accurate and a lot of it was not. It polarized people. When you hear about everything from banning books to firing teachers to doing all those things, we could have another long program about whether those things were accurate or not accurate. But the bottom line is it causes people to take sides, and especially when you're talking about a portion of our population, our Hispanic community, that feels under fire as a result of a lot of things that take place in the state. This became kind of the epicenter. The centerpiece for a lot of those kinds of emotions and those kinds of concerns. So we understand that. We've tried to deal with this with a level of sensitivity that in some cases has been effective, in others it has not. So we need to do work for sure.
Dr. John Petticone, thank you very much for being with us, Superintendent of TUSD. Have yourself a great weekend. Your Bears lost last night, right?
I'm wearing the tie.
Yeah, I see that. I had to mention that.
The tie.
All right.
Go Niners.
Jimmy Spogel, stick around. Sarah Garrett-Gasson joins us for the Reporters Roundtable. That's coming up next on The Buckmaster Show.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. In a solemn ceremony, the bodies of the four Americans who were killed this week in Libya have returned to U.S. soil. President Obama, Secretary of State Clinton among those waiting at Andrews Air Force Base to pay tribute to the four, including U.S. Ambassador to Libya, Chris Stevens. Meanwhile, there have been more assaults on U.S. embassies across the Middle East and elsewhere today, including a violent protest outside the embassy in Tunis, where authorities responded with tear gas and gunshots, leaving two people dead, about 30 others wounded.
Spain may be the next European country seeking a financial bailout. At a meeting of finance ministers, Spain revealed today it will present a new set of economic reforms by the end of the month. Updating Wall Street, the Dow about 20 points higher, the Nasdaq up 25. This is SRN News.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowland Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchases, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Dragonfly Village is in the midst of a capital campaign to build a 12-building village on a portion of the Amity Foundation's Circle Tree Ranch to reunite children in need with their families. Upon completion, the village will have housing for 100 families annually. Please be a part of making the Dragonfly Village dream a reality. Find out more at dragonflyvillage.org. That's dragonflyvillage.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including five major roadways. Projects underway include the modern streetcar in downtown Tucson, Cold Road Extension to Sabino Canyon Road, and Speedway from Camino Seco to Houghton. Please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. Time for our Friday Reporters Roundtable featuring local journalists sounding off on the week's top stories. Jimmy Bogle stays over from our interview with Dr. John Pettacone. Jimmy is the editor of the Tucson Weekly, and we are joined now by St. Louis, Missouri's own Sarah. Since we were talking about New Trier and Winnetka, Illinois, we might as well talk about St. Louis. Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial writer for the Arizona Daily Star. If you have a question or comment, is St. Louis a better community than the Chicago area? You can call us on the Buckmaster Show.
Go Kirkwood Pioneers. That's all I have to say.
790-2040. And we want to mention our friends at Splendido. You enjoyed, while you were sitting in for me, saying it. Go ahead.
I did. I did enjoy saying Splendido.
At Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley, a true continuing care retirement community. Learn more about Splendido over breakfast at the Hilton Tucson East. That breakfast is coming up this Thursday at 9:30. It's a free breakfast. RSVP and say you heard about it on the Buckmaster Show, 762-4090, SplendidoTucson.com. And Jimmy Bogle from Reno, Washoe County, Nevada.
Amen, brother. I just have a question. Does Splendido take 30-somethings? Because I could really use some assistant.
Go out there.
Man,
I might be at that breakfast. It's going to be a huge buffet out at the Tucson Hilton East. And Jimmy, my goodness, you can be planning for the future.
I just have to say we're in the middle of our Best of Tucson issue, which, by the way, comes out on September 27th, and we're finishing production on that. And I could use a nice assisted true continuing care community right now. Let me tell you.
After your little editor's note, do you want to not talk about that?
Let's talk about the issues of the day, Bill.
Okay.
Cover typos are annoying, is all I will say.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Sarah, the editorial that – did you write this one, the mayor's idea to close Congress Street merit study?
I did not, but we of course, discuss everything.
Of course.
And, yeah.
I mean, it's worth talking about.
I think it is. I think, of course, the people who have businesses and live along that corridor need to be consulted first and foremost. But I think it's an interesting idea. I'm always glad to hear things that may not pan out in the end, but are at least innovative ideas that have worked in other places that indicate that we're actually thinking about things. And if nothing else, it gets the conversation started.
And Jimmy, so many communities have done this successfully, not only here in the United States, but in Europe. It's very popular. I can think of one very popular one that I visited a few years ago in Dublin, Ireland, Grafton Street. I mean, it's like it becomes this center for activity.
Absolutely. And I think Sarah's got a great point that this is actually a tribute to what's been going on in downtown that we're at this point. I do think, however, as much as I think Jonathan Rothschild has been an amazing mayor so far, and I think it's worth studying, it's worth talking about. But I think my personal opinion is that I think the cart is a little bit before the horse here. Downtown's still got a lot of issues. We need to figure out a lot of things with the streetcar, with construction. Like we discussed last week, a lot of businesses there are still barely holding on. And I think it's worth having this discussion, but I think that the cart is a little bit before the horse here myself.
But under his plan, neither the cart nor the horse would be allowed on Congress Street, we should point out.
While we're talking about transportation, is this ongoing dust-up over the transportation department, Sarah Garrett Gasson, is this thing, is it wider, do you think, than what's being reported? I mean, is it a bigger deal?
My guess is yes.
This is the city transportation department where, let's see, we had a supervisor resign and four others have been disciplined. This time for viewing pornography on city computers while on the job.
That is just a smart decision under any circumstance. Yeah. I need to just say, please use our taxpayer resources to do whatever you think you need to do on our dime.
Yeah, I just don't get that. I'm sitting next – it's not in a chair, but right next to me is my iPhone. And it's my iPhone. And if I wanted to take a break between talking to you and check some porn right now, I could without doing that on a city or anything else computer. Not that I would, Bill.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Being in the KVOI building, I'm waiting for the lightning bolt to come down. But I'm joking. But my point is serious here that how stupid do you have to be?
Yeah.
Well, I think it just speaks to a level of, I think, casual Friday is probably putting it a little not strong enough. I think it speaks to a culture, an attitude, a kind of laissez-faire. We can get away with it. Who cares? No one's looking. This is the same department where we had people doing side jobs using city supplies and workers and bidding jobs. It's pretty incredible that it has lasted for so long, and only because it's been going on and it hasn't been really investigated like one would hope. I think the new city manager, Richard Miranda, is probably going to keep investigating. I mean, he is the former police chief, and my guess is that he's going to find a lot more.
And as well he should. And let's give credit where credit's due. This stuff has come out. That's a good sign. These things are coming out. They're being revealed. People are being punished, maybe not as strongly as some people think they should be. But we're whacking on the city for justifiably for good reason. Let's throw them a slight bone and say, at least this is coming out. That's a start.
This is Friday Reporters Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040, 790-2040. If you would like to weigh in on a particular topic, one that caught my attention, Sarah Garrett Gasson, is the city banning dog steroid injections as a way to thwart greyhound track. The track is in South Tucson, as you know. I'm not a big fan of dog racing. Yeah. And Steve Kasachek, city councilman, said he'd love to see the state legislature step up to the plate and tell the Gaming Commission to get some guts and end dog racing in Arizona.
I agree. I think it's incredibly damaging to the animals involved. They're not treated well. I know people who support Greyhound racing will be lighting up the phones probably and saying, but I like it and we treat the dogs well. But if you have the South Tucson passed an ordinance that prohibited certain things from going on in with regard to Greyhound racing, the grade of meat, anabolic steroid injections, things like that. And instead of stopping those, they were basically carrying on, but just down the street with veterinarians, and I use that term loosely, who were giving the injections, and just it was a geographical thing. It wasn't we're not going to do this anymore for the welfare of the animals. And thank goodness that the people on the city council stepped up and did what was right by the animals that are the ones who are actually doing the work in all of this and said, no, you can't do that in the city limits.
Yeah, and the Tucson Greyhound Park, I don't know about all of Greyhound racing, but the way they've acted, and I feel bad for both the city of South Tucson because they get a lot of tax revenue from there, and of course the people who have jobs there, but the way they've acted, it's been appalling. I also have to say, I have to toot the Tucson Weekly's horn. The reason why this issue came to the forefront was because our reporter, Tim Vanderpool, several months ago actually went down on a tip and caught Dr. Joe Robinson injecting these dogs on a lot that was just off the property. The business owner actually ended up writing us a letter and saying we didn't know this, we apologize for it. That part was omitted from the Star story, but the reason why this came to the forefront and happened is the power of good journalism and what Tim Vanderpool did with the Tucson Weekly.
I just would like to suggest, if this is just off the top of my head,
yeah,
but if we'd
ahead.
Like a sport where you could bet, you could get like a whole field, like a lawn, and just have like different ruminants out there, like goats and sheep and cows, and who's going to finish the first? I think I would bet
that
on that.
That would be fun.
I think people would go for it.
Another city story. The city will not rescue the Marist College. So now the diocese will have a big decision. I'm disappointed in this. Big kind of preservation guy, and I would have liked to have seen this building. It's unusual to have a two or, in this case, a three-story adobe building. They're very unusual to find in the United States anymore, but the city says they don't have the money to fix this up. Jimmy Bogle.
I don't know if it's so much the city. We're still kind of pouring into it, but from what I understand, talking again to Tim Vanderpool, one of our reporters, it's looking like that. Yeah, the city doesn't have the money, and that's legitimate, but it's looking like that there was a deal that was pretty much settled that it's possible the Catholic Church actually backed out on for some reason. They didn't want to give up control of the Marist. Mm. And we're still digging into that. But if that is the case, that's the shame. I mean, we should try to save this, and you know, if it's coming down to selfishness and stuff like that, that's a shame.
I mean, it's a three-story adobe building.
The only one in Arizona.
Turn of the century, and very unusual. Even if you go to a place like Santa Fe or in New Mexico, it's very unusual, Sarah, to see a three-story adobe building still standing.
Well, and it is sort of barely still standing.
Yeah.
It's
crumbling.
Yeah, it needs help immediately. But I do need to say that the diocese has known this has been an ongoing issue for quite some time. It's not like the three-story building just, you know, popped out of nowhere and started to crumble. So I think it's incumbent upon the diocese to either say, yes, we want to invest the money to do this, or say, we're just going to not let it – we're just going to – tear it down and let that be that. But the from my understanding, the negotiations where the a private developer was supposed to come in and develop mixed use and retail and all of that just never quite panned out.
All right, let's go now to Dan on the Buckmaster Show live line. Dan wants to pick up on the city, has a comment on the city manager. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, I'm just wondering if we can depend upon this Star newspaper to tell us exactly why our city manager and all of his supervisors for these various departments have been letting this theft and dishonesty go by for years without even noticing it, and all the money that we're paying those people to do their job and they're very lax in doing it.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
Well, I think the issue is we have a new city manager, relatively speaking. He was an interim for a while. Now he's the full city manager, Richard Miranda. And this is coming to light, and it's the sort of thing that good journalism, good journalists get in there and dig and things come out. But part of it is if the culture is this is okay and there's no one to object, you need to be able to have people who are willing to stand up and say, no, this is going on and this is wrong and I'm going to blow the whistle on it. And if the culture is that this is okay, then you're not going to find those people. So I give credit to the city manager and to the reporters who are looking into these things and coming up with some really good information. I mean, the city is not exactly thrilled to find itself on the front page of any newspaper. They would like to, you know, have everything be A-okay. So I think it is to journalists' credit in the Star that this stuff is being played prominently and that we know about it.
Amen, sister.
A poll came out from Public Policy Polling, considered a Democratic-leaning organization. And this poll shows Republican Jeff Flake with a one-point percentage lead on Democrat Richard Carmona in the U.S. Senate race. Jimmy, that's getting very close.
It is close.
Too close to call.
Yeah, although I do think you have to take – they are right. Public policy polling, they are do lean a little Democratic. So I would say that it's probably not quite that close. But the fact of the matter is Richard Carmona has got a great resume. He's running a great campaign. Jeff Flake, like any – someone who's been in you know – Congress for a long time is going to have some issues that you can kind of use and throw at him. And of course, he's had some, I hate to use the word flip-flops, but I'll use it anyway, a lot of notorious flip-flops when it comes to his policies on immigration and stuff like that. But it's going to be a close race. The thing that you have to remember is Arizona overall is still a very heavily Republican state. And if you look at the polls and how he's doing compared to, for example, how Obama's doing against Romney, it's very impressive. He's doing well, whereas Obama's not doing so well. It's going to be a tough race for him because you've got to convince a lot of people with an R next to their name and a lot of people with an I, independent, next to your name to vote for you. But if anyone can do it, it's probably Richard Carmona. I think he's doing a great job.
And Dennis DeConcini was the last Democrat, Sarah, to win a U.S. Senate race in Arizona. And the state, as Jimmy points out, leans more Republican now.
Well, that's true. I mean, Republicans do have the voter registration edge. But independents are increasingly, as we've talked about many times, taking more and more of that pie. I think we have to also put this in the context of the two Republican senators that Arizonans have known for years, John Kyle and John McCain. And some of the criticism about both of those men is that they don't focus enough on Arizona issues, that they're more the, you know, the statesman, the national kind of
that they will appear on every national show, but
right.
Sometimes are reluctant to appear on local programs.
Right.
Not interesting example, Bill.
Yeah, not that any of us have, you
no,
know.
No, have run into any of these issues
never.
Before. No, of course
no.
not.
But yeah. I think Jeff Flake is going to kind of have to deal with that, it just with the Republican tie and also that Richard Carmona, he's a go-getter, and so he has a very energetic persona, which may be in contrast to what we have now.
And quick note about the immigration flights. U.S. has ended those home back to Mexico flights of illegal immigrants, Jimmy Bogle.
It really goes to show how much the economy and other factors such as 1070 have really cut down on immigration. There's just not the number of people coming anymore to justify these flights. Plenty of seats available, yeah. It's really a testament to how bad our economy's gotten, I think.
And I think some improvement in the Mexican middle class, some economic development there.
All right. That's going to do it for the Friday Reporters Roundtable. Sarah and Jimmy, both of you have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks a lot. We've got Weekend Watch coming up with Matt Russell next.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. You know the benefits of soft water, right? Softer laundry, softer skin, hair, and spot-free glasses. And once you have soft water, you can't live without it. But did you know a Culligan high-efficiency water softener saves up to 46% on water, salt, and energy compared to a time clock water softener? Now that's efficient. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener really is the world's most efficient water softener. So put it to work in your home and start saving today. It virtually ends hard water spotting throughout your entire home, from your glasses to the shower doors. In fact, it makes all your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer too, like your dishwasher and washing machine, even your water heater. A Culligan high-efficiency water softener delivers real soft water and real savings. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan, better water, pure and simple.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoTucson.com.
Think credit unions don't have the locations or ATM networks that the big banks do? Think again. Pyramid Federal Credit Union offers fee-free ATM access at 120 ATMs in Southern Arizona and 60,000 ATMs throughout the country, plus free shared branch access at credit unions nationwide. And the convenience continues online with free bill pay and 24/7 online banking. So no matter where you are, you're just around the corner from Pyramid Federal Credit Union. What are you waiting for? Open your account today. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
And of course, that music signals the weekend on the Buckmaster Show. Looking for a great weekend getaway, may we recommend Silver City, Grant County, New Mexico, just 3.5 hours east of Tucson. And the 8th Annual Gila River Festival. It began yesterday, runs through September 26th, so there is a lot going on over in Silver City. You can stay at the wonderful Bear Mountain Lodge or the Pinos Altos Cabins or Faywood Hot Springs Resort. Plenty of great places to stay in the Silver City area. For more information, visit southwestnewmexico.org. And of course, that music also means it is time for Tucson's own culinary cruiser, back from another food eating contest, and he has his souvenir rib bib from a barbecue rib contest that you were judging up, I think it was in Reno or somewhere, wasn't it, Matt?
right outside of Reno, and I think we need to produce the commemorative line of Buckmaster products. I think the Buckmaster bib should accompany me wherever I go, Bill.
Make it plenty big, right? Yeah, I mean, very generously cut. What's going on in restaurant openings this weekend?
You know, Bill, we just love celebrating new restaurants here in Tucson, and there have been a lot lately, but one is opening just today that I think makes sense for dinner tonight. It's called Umi Star Umi, U-M-I.
Okay.
Umi Star, right on Campbell Avenue, and they're specializing in, of course, Asian fusion cuisine. And, Bill, there are some things on this menu that I think I challenge you to find anywhere else, like Asian tacos and Asian hot dogs, if you can believe that. But the sushi there is king, as is their very cool cocktail menu. I would encourage all of your listeners to be among the first to experience Umi Star tonight for their big opening.
The Asian dog, can you explain what exactly is an Asian hot dog? Is that something that they'll be selling at your beloved Baltimore Orioles games?
Thinking big, Bill. That's the way to do it. Yeah, I mean, they really have these wonderful pan-Asian flavors and influences from that part of the world that they literally bring to a house-made beef dog, and it's something new and interesting and innovative. I think it's great.
All right, Umi Star opening up. What else is opening?
Well, another restaurant recently opened a couple of weeks ago. It caught our attention just up the road in Oro Valley at the Hilton El Conquistador Resort, and it's called Epizote Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And their specialty, Bill, is everything local, from locally sourced beef and cheese and produce to local craft beers and local wines. And this weekend, this is great. They're going to be featuring a three-course dinner for only $30 a person with a lot of items to choose from. So I'd say get started with one of their fine tequilas for social hour. That's their version of happy hour. And enjoy a delicious dinner on the patio of Epizote Kitchen.
And speaking of hot dogs...
Yes, in celebration of Mexico Independence Day.
Yeah, happy Mexican Independence Day today. You got
to
have a Sonoran dog.
Indeed, on Sunday. And boy, you know, you don't have to stop at just one, because Cerveza's Taco Garage there at the Tucson Mall, they're going to be hosting their second annual Sonoran Hot Dog Eating Contest, again at 6 o'clock on Sunday. Now, I was at this event last year as an observer, Bill, not as a contestant, for the record. I was really impressed with the speed at which these Epicurean athletes were downing these puppies. Now, after the competition, guests are going to be enjoying great food and great drink specials, always a fun event. Now, I hear there's room for one more contestant, Bill. What do you think? Are you ready to suit up this year?
Yeah, right. Brought to you by Tums. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Matt Russell, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Great to have you back, Bill.
Thanks. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show is provided by Culligan, offering the best drinking water, the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home or office. We strongly recommend Culligan water. And the reason? Well, folks, it simply tastes better. Coming up this afternoon, it's the John C. Scott Show from 4 to 5 right here on KVOI. Then Monday morning, 6 to 8, it's Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of our team, our producer, the lovely and talented Miss Rosemary Brandt, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend, and we will be back with you, back in the saddle, on Monday with our Monday political face-off, and we'll also have an update on the modern streetcar project. That's coming up Monday on Buckmaster. Have yourself a great weekend.
KVOI Cortero Tucson and 930 KAPR Douglas, The Voice, Good News Radio Network.